Caldwell Baker v. Parson. Mr. Baker.
Your Honor, may it please the Court, Linus L. Baker for appellant. Your Honor, this is a case in which, from the denial of a motion to withdraw the reference. Now, the parties have extensively briefed the jurisdictional issue. This is an odd case, at least I call it an odd.
What is the status in the district court or the bankruptcy court at this time?
Of this proceeding, Your Honor, it has been, the proceeding was the underlying case. The bankruptcy court dismissed the adversarial case on the basis of res judicata. That went up to the district court. The district court reversed that and has remanded that back to the bankruptcy court. The district court also instructed, or at least advised, the bankruptcy court because of this appeal that it might be wise to stay those proceedings until the disposition.
So the case is back in the bankruptcy court?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So in what sense is it final? I mean, you argue your motion to withdraw, the denial of the motion to withdraw was final in some sense?
Yes.
But the case is still kicking around.
And that's, yes, Your Honor, and that is the oddity of this case.
It's not an oddity. It's just a reason why we don't have jurisdiction. There are all sorts of people who appeal all the time from decisions that aren't final.
I understand that, Your Honor. If I may, the facts of this case were that we filed a motion to withdraw the reference during the pendency of the adversarial complaint. We filed it immediately. We filed a motion to determine the core non-core claims in the bankruptcy court. The district court then looked at that, and upon the appellee's urging, he stayed his disposition of that motion to withdraw the reference, and the district court waited until the underlying case was.
But how is this related to the finality issue?
Well, because that order of the motion to withdraw the reference is normally not appealable because it is subsumed back into the underlying case. Normally, generally, district courts.
I'm lost. He denied the motion.
But there was no.
But the case is still going on in the bankruptcy court.
Not at that time, Your Honor.
But now it is, right?
Well, but jurisdiction.
Why don't you just wait till the bankruptcy court decides the case and then appeal then?
Because it is unknown, Judge, at the time.
I don't understand you. Why the case is still going on in the bankruptcy court. Why don't you wait till it's over with, and then if you've lost, you can appeal?
Well, Your Honor, you're asking me to engage in some sort of looking out in the future.
No, I'm asking you to wait till the case is over.
Wait till
the case is over. Then if you've lost, you'll appeal. If you've won, you won't have to appeal.
But it has nothing to do with the finality of this motion withdraw, Your Honor. When this motion.
That's like saying, I want to appeal from the district court's order denying the motion for summary judgment because, of course, if I go to trial and win, I won't be able to appeal from the order denying the motion for summary judgment.
But
the summary judgment denial is final.
Your Honor,
that's an old line.
This line isn't old because, Judge, there is an underlying proceeding in which that denial of summary judgment is subsumed. There is an ongoing proceeding. This case had no underlying proceeding. The bankruptcy judge.
Terribly confused.
Your Honor.
There is an adversary action pending in the bankruptcy.
When this appeal was made, that adversary was dismissed. There is no way to obtain review of this denial of a motion to withdraw the reference, Judge, because there was no underlying.
It doesn't matter.
I couldn't appeal this.
What Easterbrook said. There are many things you can't appeal because they're non-final, and by the time there's a final judgment, that ruling has become moot. So then you can't appeal it. That's life, right?
Well, but Your Honor, respectfully, the motion to withdraw the reference, had the district court waited or not waited, I could have appealed this motion back when the district court dismissed my underlying adversary. He did not do that. Therefore, this order, Judge, is unappealable. You're not going to be able to appeal. I can't obtain review of this order.
That was the point I was making. You will never be able to obtain review independently of the summary judgment order. You can never get review independently of an order enforcing an obligation to make discovery. All these things are interlocutory. They don't get appellate review. And then at the end of the case, we review the final judgment. That's the way this system works.
And, Judge, I agree with that. And what we are asking for is not in contravention of that principle. The denial of the motion to withdraw the reference was a final order because that was a standalone order. The district court, that was the last order that disposed of that case. The district court could have, and had it within his power, to overturn the bankruptcy judge's dismissal of the adversary. He did not do that. And one of the reasons the district court denied my motion to withdraw the reference is because he waited, and then it became a post-appeal withdrawal of the reference, which was not our fault, but it was a result of the district court waiting. Your Honor, if you allow...
You want your case tried in the district court, right?
It's a non-core claim, yes, Your Honor.
And you want to try it in the district court, but at present, because of the denial of your motion, it's being tried in the bankruptcy court. Is that correct?
Because of the bank, yes. That would be part of the reason, yes.
Suppose you lose in the bankruptcy court. Then you can appeal, and one of your grounds of appeal would be that the case shouldn't have been in the bankruptcy court, should have been in the district court, right?
That is correct.
So you'll be able to do that. You'll be able to do that. So you can wait till the end, and you won't have lost anything.
Your Honor, what I am losing now, though, is the ability...
No, you think you're in the wrong court. You think you should be in the district court and you're the bankruptcy court. If you're correct on that and you lose in the bankruptcy court, you will be able to appeal and say, I'm in the wrong court, that court had no jurisdiction, right?
Well,
that's exactly like Judge Easterbrook's summary judgment order.
But here's the procedural problem, Your Honor, is that when the bankruptcy judge denied...
Now, let's talk about the present. The case is in the bankruptcy court. You think it should be in the district court. If you lose in the bankruptcy court and appeal, you can argue it was in the wrong court. Bankruptcy court didn't have jurisdiction. You can do all those things, right? So just wait, and then you do that. You don't do it now. You're jumping the gun. You may win in the bankruptcy court. Then you'll be happy, right?
Well, no, I'm not going to be happy.
You will be happy even if you win your case?
I will be happy if I win my case.
Okay, and you may
win. I will
be
very happy.
It is possible. You may win your case in the bankruptcy court. Then you'll be happy.
Yes.
Right? You don't have to appeal. As long as you have a chance for future happiness, your appeal is premature.
Your Honor, yes. And I wish this case turned on my happiness. But the notion that this order is not appealable, Your Honor, places a litigant in an untenable position because I have to predict. For example, I'd have to predict. I mean, this is all wonderful hindsight that we're engaging in, but at the time that order was entered, there was no underlying case for it to be subsumed in. Now, I would have to predict.
I don't understand that at all. You can't.
No. Here's the adversarial that this motion to withdraw the reference
the
was premised.
What, right? Adversarial is an adjective modifying something.
Proceeding.
Adversarial
complaint.
Action in the bankruptcy.
Yes. And that was made timely. The adversarial complaint in which it was based upon, that proceeding, was dismissed, and it was appealed. That left this motion to withdraw the reference out there. Now, if I didn't appeal that motion to withdraw the reference, I'd have to predict that I'd have to appeal the motion to withdraw the reference somehow in the appeal from the bankruptcy court on the adversary. And I can't take that up on appeal because my notice of appeal was already affected and those issues decided. So the litigant is out here trying to guess what will happen in the future. And that order, standing alone, was, Your Honor, I respectfully submit, appealable. It also denied our right to a jury trial. And I think the court has jurisdiction to do that. Now, I understand that it went up on appeal to the district court and got reversed on that premise, and it's still there. But this has created piecemeal appeals in which an appellant now has to guess.
The only thing that created a piecemeal appeal is your notice of appeal.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully submit to you that that standing alone was an appealable order. And there was, if the district court had ruled and denied that prior to the dismissal of the underlying adversarial proceeding, I could have appealed it. That's the normal procedure. But it did not happen that way. And so I'm left to guess whether or not that is an appealable order or whether or not I can appeal it. It's not that denial of motions to withdraw the reference are unappealable. They are appealable. And the question is, where do you appeal that?
Okay, well, do you have anything else you'd like to discuss besides the appealability of the motion?
Well, Your Honor,
the denial of your motion, is there anything else?
The underlying case within our appeal, one of the reasons it was denied, Judge, is because the district court did not determine the core, non-core status of our claims. That's related to. And one of the things that the bankruptcy judge refused to do is to determine the status of our core, non-core claims. And that is the essential aspect of jurisdiction in this case. Whether or not the bankruptcy court has jurisdiction hinges on the determination of the core, non-core. The district court recognized that the bankruptcy court refused to make that determination.
What would be the theory under which this was not a core proceeding?
It is tort claims, Your Honor, fraud claims. And these fraud claims arise under state law, Kansas state law.
But you're suing as a creditor, aren't you? You're suing the estate as the debtor's estate as a creditor?
Some, yes, creditors. They owe us the money. They committed fraud. They should have to pay damages for that. I mean, that's one of the issues here is that...
What's the difference between a tort creditor and a contract creditor?
Tort creditor is that it's personal to the tort claimant. And the tort claimant has non-core claims. A contract, pre-petition, these are standalone claims. They don't need the bankruptcy law or the code to exist. They exist outside of that. And that's a non-core claim. And these fraud claims that we have...
So that's your merits argument against the denial of the motion to withdraw, what you're just saying?
The underlying basis
on which
is the fraud and the tort state, and they are standalone, do not need the bankruptcy code to exist. They should have been withdrawn because, in the bankruptcy court, the statute says shall determine. Bankruptcy court said, no, I'm not going to do it. And then the district court said, well, that's moot, which... respectfully, it can't become moot because that is an initial jurisdictional threshold question for the bankruptcy court to determine. So you have all this wrapped up, and then the motion was denied. Procedurally, Judge, it denied us due process, and that's another reason why, Your Honors, I believe that this issue is appealable because it's denied us due process and the right to a jury trial.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Baker. Mr. Collins?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nathan Collins, representing the appellees. Although it doesn't necessarily advance my position, I think that I need to clarify one issue. The appeal from the dismissal on the merits of this adversary proceeding was case number 03-735 in the district court. Mr. Baker indicated that had been remanded and was currently pending in the bankruptcy court, and that is not, in fact, the case. The 735 appeal is being held under advisement pending this court's disposition of the instant appeal. The court is correct in identifying that there are essentially two issues here, the first one being whether or not this court, in fact, has jurisdiction over the appeal, and the second one being the merits of the district court's denial of the motion to withdraw the reference. With regard to jurisdiction, I would first say that it appears to be undisputed that jurisdiction in this court would not be appropriate under 28 U.S.C. 158 because the district court, in denying the motion to withdraw the reference, would have been acting in the exercise of its original jurisdiction rather than acting in an appellate capacity under 158A or 158B. Therefore, this court would not have jurisdiction under 158. Therefore, I think that to the extent jurisdiction does exist, Mr. Baker has correctly predicated jurisdiction on Section 1291. But as I think the court has correctly identified here, there is no final appealable order that could be subject to appeal under Section 1291. This court and virtually every court that has considered it has been clear in holding that the denial or the granting, for that matter, of a motion to withdraw the reference is interlocutory in nature and hence is not independently appealable. And we've cited those cases in our brief. I believe the cases are McGahey, Mowens, and Powelson. The same cases that have considered the issue have also declined to assert jurisdiction under the collateral order doctrine. Specifically, as the court has already recognized, the courts have said that particularly the requirement that an order be effectively unreviewable on appeal from the final judgment, which under Cohen is one of the criteria for the collateral order exception, is not satisfied because, as the court has indicated, Mr. Baker and his clients can obtain relief upon appeal. And I think that it's important to note the exact nature of the alleged error and the relief that's being sought. The error that is alleged is that the bankruptcy court entered a judgment of dismissal without making an express finding in its order that this was, in fact, a court proceeding. So it is not necessarily an error of the district court that is being raised by the Baker entities, but rather an error of the district court, and an error that I would submit is not necessarily jurisdictional because these are, in fact, obviously core proceedings. Section 157 specifically provides that among the enumerated core proceedings is dischargeability determinations. And if you review the complaint, you will see that virtually, I think, every count is predicated on a claim that the claims are non-dischargeable. I have been accused, I think, of lumping all of these entities together as the Baker entities, and so for purposes of clarification, I would acknowledge to the court that there are three entities. There is the Caldwell Baker Group, Baker Group LC, and Carl Baker as trustee for the MTY Group, and the Baker Group and Caldwell Baker have submitted proofs of claim in the bankruptcy proper, and MTY has not.
Maybe you covered this, but there's a reference somewhere to there was some July 6th, some critical argument, and was that in the district court or the bankruptcy court or something?
That must have been the district court. I think that was the district court argument, and I'm not sure what that reference is.
Did the court issue an order after that?
If that is the 735 appeal, I previously indicated that we have submitted briefs in that appeal. We have argued that appeal.
But and it's still pending.
The court is reserving judgment pending this court's disposition.
Waiting for us.
And similarly, I guess the 854 appeal was... Those claims were remanded for clarification to the bankruptcy court. And when I say 854 appeal, I am referring to the claims litigation of the Baker Group and the Caldwell Baker entities. They filed claims in the bankruptcy proper. Those claims were stricken or dismissed. They went up on appeal. We also briefed and argued that in the district court. The district court remanded that case back to the bankruptcy court, and the bankruptcy court stayed those proceedings also pending this court's disposition.
Your opponent... lists two different case numbers in the district court, and you list one.
This is an appeal.
What's that about?
This
is limited to 471.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what's 364?
364 was an appeal there are two bankruptcies. There are the corporate debtors, right. Cirque and Cirque LLC, and there are my clients, Fred and Eugenia Parsons, who are the individual principals of those entities. The corporate debtors filed their bankruptcy first, their Chapter 11. In that bankruptcy...
Well, is that 364?
The appeal from the adversary, which was dismissed in the corporate debtor's bankruptcy, is the 364 appeal. Okay. This motion to withdraw the reference was the adversary filed in the...
So is 364 before us?
No, it is not, Your Honor.
Okay.
And with regard to the right to the entitlement to a jury trial, as I was arguing, this is essentially a dischargeability determination, their adversary complaint. In Hallahan, this court has specifically held that under Dairy Queen and Beacon Theaters that there is no entitlement to a jury trial for dischargeability determinations, and that is the case even if the plaintiff is also seeking damages as an incident to the dischargeability determination. Further... as I've indicated, at least two of the entities filed proofs of claim, and so there should be no dispute that under Langenkamp, Graham Financieri, and Katchen, the three cases decided by the Supreme Court, by filing a proof of claim in a bankruptcy, a creditor has consented to the equitable jurisdiction of the bankruptcy court and therefore has waived any entitlement to a jury trial. Mr. Baker has argued that because they held MTY out there, they didn't file a proof of claim on behalf of this one related entity, that somehow they are entitled to, on the one hand, file their proof of claim against the bankruptcy estate, and on the other hand, file an adversary proceeding and get a jury trial on the merits. And I would submit that the cases that we've cited in our brief, including the Hooker case, which I believe is a Second or Third Circuit case, that courts have not indulged this type of strategy whereby I think in Hooker what they did is they said, well, extend the bar date so that we can file our adversary proceeding, we'll adjudicate that, and then we'll file our proofs of claim after the fact, because if we file our proofs of claim now, we will have waived our right to a jury trial. And the court said, no, you can't do that. That's the nature of bankruptcy. If you're going to come in here, if you're going to invoke this court's jurisdiction in order to obtain relief against the debtor, then you have consented to this court's equitable jurisdiction. And I believe that by filing an adversary proceeding, irrespective of whether MTY, in fact, filed a proof of claim, that they have consented to the bankruptcy court's equitable jurisdiction by filing an adversary complaint seeking a determination of dischargeability and also seeking damages as an incident to that claim.
Is that it?
I would say also that as an alternative, the Baker entities have argued that in the event this court finds it lacks subject matter jurisdiction, that they would like this court to consider it in mandamus. And I would just point out to the court that in order for mandamus to issue, they bear the burden of proving that they have a clear and indisputable right to such relief. And as I've indicated, the sole basis for their claim appears to be or that they are entitled to a jury trial. And as I've set forth, they have consented. The nature of their claims are not the type that are entitled to a jury trial. Therefore, they cannot make the requisite showing that they are entitled to mandamus relief.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Baker, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Your Honor, let me address the notion that we consented to jurisdiction, the appellants. Filing of an adversarial complaint does not consent to jurisdiction. In fact, you place in the adversarial complaint, we do not consent to jurisdiction. The idea that Mr. Collins is correct, Caldwell Baker Company did file a proof of claim. Baker Group did not initially. Only after the
Let
district.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Baker: what is this case number 364 doing on your cover of your brief? You're not appealing from anything in that, are you?
Your Honor, I am. The reason I am is because the district court referenced and incorporated that decision.
I don't understand. How can you appeal from a case just because it's referred to by a judge. I don't get that.
Well, I did reference it, Your Honor, and one of the reasons I wasn't sure, because the district court embraced that decision.
But look, what you have, you can only, you can't appeal from a reference. You have to appeal from an order of some sort. So what's the order in case number 364 that you're appealing from and would like us to reverse?
It was the order in which Judge Herndon out of the district court referenced. That is why I did it. I had to raise those issues.
I don't understand. Did you file a notice of appeal within 30 days of that or what?
No, Your Honor.
Did you ever file a notice of appeal?
No, I did, though, reference it in my statement of issues, because that is an issue that Judge Herndon raised. I didn't know how else to bring that before the court because Judge Herndon referenced it. Whether or not it's appealable, it is an issue, and it is a reason that the district court...
You have to appeal from a decision in order to discuss it.
Well, Judge, even if I'm not appealing from that order, I still... the court must consider it in determining the district court's rationale. One of the reasons why the district court denied my motion to withdraw the reference is because of that order. And so I had to discuss that because for all the reasons that the district court brought it up. That's why I brought it to the court's attention.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Baker and both counsel. Next case.